When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You're listening to the Co-Main Event Podcast. And now your hosts, Ben Folks and Chad Dundas.
That's right. You're listening to another episode of the Co-Main Event Mixed Martial Arts Podcast. I'm Chad Dundas. That's Ben Folks. We're both longtime MMA journalists. And for the last 11 years, we've been meeting here every week to break down all the action in the wild, weird, and occasionally wonderful world of mixed martial arts. Ben, we're going to spend most of this episode, I think, talking about UFC 293, which is going to go down this weekend at the Kudos Bank Center, granddaddy of them all, in Sydney, Australia. Headlined, of course, by Israel Adesanya's middleweight title defense against Sean Strickland. Co-main event, Tai Tuivasa versus Alexander Volkov. So we will talk mostly, I think, about the main event and also perhaps the other relative merits of this UFC pay-per-view. Of course, last weekend you had Ciryl Gane get something of a comeback win over Sergey Spivak at a Fight Night event over in France. We will also give some talk to that. We will take listener mail. We will do all of the other stuff that the people out there in the expanded Co-Main Event podcast universe have come to love and enjoy. But how you doing, man, before we get into any of that?
Well, I'm doing okay. What I was hoping that we would get into, at least in this intro section, is, fella, I happened to see come across the TV screen. Or really, actually, more accurately, the phone screen when people sent me recordings of their TV screens as they were watching some professional wrestling from Chicago, Illinois this past weekend. And yeah. Who should they see? Fucking front row.
Second row, but pretty close.
Grinning his ass off. Just have a boyish delight on his face at the sight of some sports entertainment. It was none other than your boy Chad Dundas. Tell us about your trip. You went and saw some wrestling.
I mean, like I said on Twitter, it's hard not to have a smile on your face when Bryan Danielson and Ricky Starks are out there getting their stuff in
the
ring.
What was happening at that exact moment? You were delighted.
So my friend Tyler and I went out to Chicago. He wanted to attend StarCast Wrestling Weekend, which is a pretty big convention at this point on the scene in professional wrestling. And so I said I would accompany him. I was more interested in going to see the live wrestling than I was with the actual wrestling convention. Although, you know, that turned out to be a heck of a way to spend a couple of days also.
Did you meet Demolition?
Yeah, I got a photo with Demolition.
Hell yeah. Were they wearing the spikes and the fucking face paint? How have you not already sent it to me?
They had the face paint, no spikes. And, no, I'll send it to you. You'll see a certain kind of vibe that Demolition is putting off at this point. We went and saw a bunch of live wrestling. We saw some indie stuff. And then on Saturday night, we went to the live AEW show Collision, which is their Saturday night show. And unwittingly, Ben Folks, placed ourselves at the epicenter of professional wrestling for the weekend. And let me tell you why, because there is an MMA tie-in here. About an hour before the show was set to begin, AEW, All Elite Wrestling, which is at this point the biggest competitor to WWE and in some circles has surpassed WWE as the favorite, or I guess professional wrestling company of choice, they sent out an email saying that they had fired for cause our guy, Philip Jack Brooks, a.k.a. CM Punk, former UFC luminary, CM Punk. He had been suspended for about a week or so owing to yet another backstage incident. This one, he was rumored to have punched a much smaller, much less famous professional wrestler called the Jungle Boy. And then they got into a backstage fracas that caused damage to equipment. And it sounds like scared AEW owner Tony Khan. And so Philip Jack Brooks has been fired from yet another job. Yet another job
like
hasn't worked
time.
Out. Well, I'm at this point, I feel like there's a lot of mounting evidence to suggest that perhaps CM Punk is kind of an a-hole.
Yeah.
And that
maybe
perhaps,
does not work well with others.
Yeah, perhaps CM Punk's biggest problem is CM Punk, it would seem,
okay.
at this point. And one thing that you gotta admire about the guy is that he's been complaining as long as we've known him.
Yeah.
And one of the things that struck me after this weekend when he got fired, and we were at AEW in CM Punk's hometown of Chicago, so that's what I meant when I said we were unwittingly put at the epicenter of the wrestling world, where some fans were hot. Some fans were hot over it. There was a lot of CM Punk t-shirts in the crowd. A lot of people, I think, had bought their tickets under the understanding that they were going to come out here and see CM Punk get all his stuff in. And instead, they found out an hour before showtime that he had not just been suspended, but indeed had been fired. So there was all that. It was
to see Guns N' Roses and find out Axl Rose got the boot 15 minutes ago.
Yeah, so there was a surly. Some of the fans there were surly. But here's the thing that I started thinking about CM Punk. This is a guy who has gotten every opportunity that he ever asked for, right? At the beginning, everyone was saying, oh, you know, WWE needs to get CM Punk in there. They need to get CM Punk. He'll be an indie guy. He'll bring a whole new attitude to WWE. So they hired him. He got the opportunity. And then when he was in WWE, he's complaining. He's like, oh, they won't put me at the top. They don't have the guts to make me the champion. They did his little sit down on the stage and do the pipe bomb promo that was so famous. And was legitimately cool at the time. I was like, what happened? Well, they made him the champion. He got the opportunity, and he's out here running around. I'm going, oh, they don't respect me as the champion. They don't consider my physical health important. They won't let me main event WrestleMania. So in the end, he gets mad. He takes his ball and goes home, says he's going to retire from wrestling. What happens later? Oh, he wants to be an MMA fighter. He wants to get an MMA. So what happens? He got the opportunity. They gave it to him. He got to go to the UFC and have a couple of fights. They gave him essentially like 3 years to do nothing but go to Rufus Sport and try to learn to fight.
And that one is not even an opportunity he really asked for, as we learned later. It was like he was just sort of idly talking about it, and the UFC phoned him up and was like, are you serious? Because if you're serious, we'll sign you to a contract right now.
So yeah, he gets to go in there, he does his thing, it doesn't work out, he goes back into retirement, he's gone for another, you know, whatever amount of time it was, and then AEW gets started. At first, he's critical of the company, he's like, oh, this is going to be a disaster, this is not going to work out, I'm going to go out of business. It turns into a going concern, and then all of a sudden, CM Punk wants a shot, he wants to get up there, he wants to do it. Guess what? They gave him the opportunity. He came in there once again, starts working, does all this stuff. Oh, world is still out to get CM Punk. And so he gets in multiple backstage and sometimes front of house, I guess you could say, both fracases and feuds and all this other stuff. And now he has been fired again. So I guess we're just waiting to see what else CM Punk wants to do. What other opportunity will be granted to him that he can then go in and act, you know, spoiled and petulant and get fired from that too.
Gonna run for president is what I'm hearing.
I mean, might as well. That's the way it's going over there.
Gonna run for president, win, get impeached in the first 6 months, take his ball and go home.
Sounds like a Philip Jack Brooks thing to do. In any case, remember, you're listening to the Co-Main Event Podcast proper. We will get to the MMA talk here in a moment. This show drops every Monday afternoon for free in your timelines and podcast libraries, but that's not all. You can also find the Co-Main Event, Ben Folks, and myself all week over on Patreon. Hit us up at patreon.com/co-main-event. Get loads of extra content, both audio and visual. You can get the visual on us if you want to see it. Plus, you get access to our official Discord message board. The best people in MMA are over there chatting it up 24/7, 365 on any number of topics. And the only rule over on the message board, which I think sets this message board apart from almost everything else in MMA, because the only rule is no assholes.
Yeah.
That'll come up again later in the show. Spoiler alert, we'll be talking about Sean Strickland. If that sounds good to you, but you're not totally sold, you can also sign up for a 7-day free trial of the Patreon at our $5 level. It's a great chance to check out a week's worth of the content over there and decide if you want to take the plunge and sign up for real. And if you can, you know how to do it. We can only keep making the podcast with the support of you, our awesome listeners. Come party with us. We think it's the best, smartest, most welcoming group of men and women talking fights online. So head over to patreon.com/comainevent and sign up to join the team. You could also consider buying some of our merchandise. Just head over to our merch shop at comainevent.com. Click the link in the top right-hand corner of the screen that says shop. That'll get you there. You'll find all the old originals, the favorites, the Dundasso t-shirt design, the old school cowboy astronaut cigarettes merch, and a lot of new stuff too. We got the bestseller on the market, the Bobby Knuck shirt. We got Are You Fucking Kidding Me shirts. You can get a Daddest Man on the Planet mug. Give that to your dad or uncle or friend, anybody who has kids that you need a cool present for them. You could get a Daddest Man on the Planet coffee mug. You can also get the brand new shirt, the Vulcamania shirt. All of that is available at comainevent.com. Click the link at the top of the page that says shop. We are partnering on the shop with our friends at Studio Superconductor. They are a brand and design studio. We can't recommend them highly enough for all your design needs. Hit them up at studiosuperconductor.com or on Instagram at Studio Superconductor. We got music this week from our guy Dennis Pham, a self-described, quote, day one co-maniac.
Hell yeah.
From San Diego. He writes a song every few years, he says. You can find his single, The Fire, right now on Spotify and Apple Music and all of the other major streaming platforms. Three rounds, as usual, this week in the Co-Main Event Podcast. In round number one, Cyril gone back, or at least as back as he can be under the circumstances. And in round number two, if everybody could just stop punching each other in the nuts and the guts for 5 minutes, we might have Israel Adesanya fight Sean Strickland this weekend at UFC 293. And in round number three, the UFC once again treks to the land down under. And what else on this card looks like a Bobby Dazzler? All that plus Are You Fucking Kidding Me and just saying stuff. But first, like we always do about this time, let's do a little bit of listener mail.
Listener mail. You say first, Bobby Dazzler?
Bobby Dazzler.
Okay, all right. That's a new one for me.
I can tell you, you're not up on the slang from the land down under, from down there in Australia.
You know, ever since my trip there a few years ago to cover Israel Adesanya versus Bobby Knuckles, I'm still trying to figure out what was meant by the sign outside banning people from doing any bananas or big torps. Still don't know what that is.
Toss a Bobby Dazzler in there. You'll be in business. First piece of listener mail this week comes to us from Brandon Boyd on Patreon. He writes, Conor McGregor received his BJJ black belt this week. As someone who has never rolled before, but somewhat understands the amount of training that goes into getting a black belt, my first thought was, but he can't stop a takedown. Could the resident CME BJJ correspondent explain how someone who appears to be a blue belt was able to attain a black belt all while sailing the world on a yacht instead of being in the gym? Ben Folks, he's talking to you. He's not talking to me. You're the CME BJJ correspondent. Break this one down for us.
Here's what I'll say. There are black belts, and then there are black belts, and never the twain shall meet. There are people who are black belt level, could go compete in black belt divisions in major tournaments and hold their own, all that kind of stuff. And then there are people who have just put the time in and who, you know, gradually progress to that level. They're black belts, but they're not elite grapplers or anything by any means. That's just kind of how it is these days in Brazilian jiu-jitsu across the world. So I don't know that you can sit here and be like, there's no way Conor McGregor is a black belt. We don't know what he's been doing in the gym. It does seem like he's getting a lot of workouts in on the deck of the yacht. That's at least the image that he is projecting for us. We don't know what the actual work has been like. He's certainly been doing martial arts long enough that he could very well be a black belt. Like, it's not like, you know, it's been 2 years or something like that. It's completely feasible that he could be sort of mid-level gym type black belt, even though that's clearly never going to be his main shit. Also, I would tell Brandon Boyd, you might be surprised how many black belts out there do not have great wrestling. You know, that's a different game, really, than especially a lot of the old school BJJ guys, where takedowns and stuff were kind of an afterthought in a lot of ways. And they did not hone that part of their game first. So that alone, I won't say. It does, though, seem a little bit like kind of the thing where we see somebody go out there, get a knockout, and their coach comes in and gives them a black belt, and we go, he didn't even do any fucking grappling. You just made up in your mind that if he won, you were going to give him a black belt, which, fine. You know, it's at this point, there was a time where having a Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt felt like a different sort of black belt than all other martial arts. Remember that? When it was like, that was a fucking legit ass thing. There were not that many of them in the world. We would look askance at the karate black belt, you know, the taekwondo black belt. It was like, oh, sure. What, you know, your dad paid for the lesson, so you got the black belt. And now jiu-jitsu has turned a little bit more into that. It's just sort of a natural progression as it's become more popular worldwide. And I think that's mostly fine. I think we'll figure. The one thing I do want to know about this, did you see, Chad? Did you happen to see this last week? The news that Demetrius Johnson, Mighty Mouse, one of the pound-for-pound all-time greats this sport has ever known, I think won his division in the Worlds at Jiu-Jitsu in the brown belt division, Chad. Mighty Mouse is out there competing in the brown belt division. Now, you are not going to sit here and with a straight face tell me that Mighty Mouse is a brown belt in the same martial arts discipline in which Conor McGregor is a black belt. Yeah. No, sir. Yeah. No, sir, I say.
Yeah. Well, I think in large part it depends in many cases on where you get the black belt, right? Like, if I'm not mistaken, it was John Kavanaugh.
Yeah.
Conor McGregor's longtime coach, friend.
A legit black belt himself.
Yeah, who gave him the black belt, is the man who would be responsible for giving Demetrius Johnson his black belt, Matt Hume?
Probably.
I mean, just so compare those two and tell me which one is the bigger hard ass. Which one okay. is going to be, which okay. one is going to be like, you're not quite there, Demetrius. You need to work on your fundamentals. Like, because it ain't Kavanaugh, okay? A guy who probably owes his entire professional living career and middling fame to Conor McGregor, whereas Matt Hume, I bet, has more of an old school, we're not going to give it to you until we're really 150% sure that you earned it.
I will not argue that Matt Hume is definitely the bigger hard ass of and probably one of the bigger hard asses in all of martial arts.
Yeah.
However, the question I would ask of Matt Hume is, what would you like to see? What do you need to see out of Demetrius Johnson's game?
Demetrius Johnson throws a guy up in the air and armbars him on the way down, and you're like, pretty good for a brown belt.
Yeah, he basically invented a new submission that only he can pull off, and you're like, I don't know, I'd like to see your footlocks come around a little more. I'd like to see you be more of a leader in the gym. Like, what the fuck do you need to see out of that guy? Also, look, I like Demetrius Johnson both as a person, have immense respect for him as a fighter, felt like he has never gotten the due he deserved as an MMA fighter. Therefore, I am not going to be the type of person who sits here and accuses Demetrius Johnson of being a sandbagging son of a bitch. I'm not going to do that.
Yeah.
Another person, a lesser enlightened person than myself, Chad, more of a bomb-throwing personality than yours truly, might perhaps make that accusation.
I mean, I don't care what level you're at. Blue belt, purple belt, black belt, brown belt. If you show up to the competition and Demetrius Johnson is in your bracket,
I'd be so pissed.
That's probably one you want to draw a circle around, no matter what your level is.
Somebody brown belt had been training their ass off for Worlds, got there, looked at the bracket, saw Demetrius Johnson, was like, it
first
can't
round
be the
opponent.
Same Demetrius Johnson, can it? Like, it
first round opponent is Demetrius Johnson.
Johnson's a common enough last name. Demetrius a little less so, but there's just no way. There's just no way one of the all-time fucking greats is in my brown belt division. Like, that's for somebody where you've been training like 7 to 9 years maybe, and you get in there and you're just like, it can't be. It just can't. And then you get out on the mats and you see Demetrius Johnson with his two swollen fists on the side of his face, standing there in his gi and his brown ass belt, and you're just like, this is bullshit.
Are you trying to tell me that most BJJ brown belts at these tournaments have not tapped out Ray Borg, right?
Probably have not invented their own submissions that only they can do on live TV.
Most of them have an armbarred Kyoji Horiguchi. You think that's the case? They have an armbarred John Moraga.
There's a chance.
Yeah, you think there's a chance they did that? They didn't go out there and choke out Demasio Page at WEC 52 13 years ago. 13 years ago, working his way up.
What
to
was
brown
he 13?
Belt.
Are you telling me he was a white belt then? Was he a blue belt?
Maybe he's been hanging out at brown belt for like a decade and Matt Hume just won't give him the black.
Matt Hume just looking at him, shaking his head and just being like, I don't know. I feel like your top game is solid. Nobody denies that. But whither the open guard? How's your De La Hiva? I just feel like I need to see a little bit more variety.
Yeah. Anyway, I just feel like it's an honorary black belt for Conor McGregor. It's like when you bring a famous athlete to your campus and you give him an honorary degree. It might be the same with Conor McGregor. We'll just have to wait.
I'll just remind Conor McGregor of something that Conan Silvera once told me, which is that the only thing a black belt is good for is to keep your pants up. The black belt never won a fight.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Pretty solid. Next question this week comes to us from the Off-White Power Ranger. He writes, do you find it a tad bit concerning that Trevor Whitman was nowhere to be seen in Rose Namajunas' corner? She, in fact, has her own new camp now led by trainer/predator/husband Pat Barry. Instead of having the cut man or doctor address her dislocated finger after round one, Barry told her she didn't need a finger. Are we witnessing the end of Rose as a legit contender in any division if this is her backing? Now, I don't know if that we want to get back into the Pat Barry thing. Opinions are all over the board on how we should think about him and his relationship with Rose Namajunas. I will say this, though. It is usually not great for star MMA fighters to break away from their original camps and start new camps where they are the top dog and they are the people paying the bills. And it is usually not great. No matter what the gender of either side of the equation is, it is usually not great when an MMA fighter puts their spouse in charge of anything, whether that be managerial duties, whether it be training, whether it be, you know, running the business side of things, whatever it is. It generally just seems like that's not great for the future. And
yeah,
Rose Namajunas is a great fighter. She's always been at the top of the division. She's been there for a long time. She's got great wins. She's a person that we think super highly of. And I'm not in love with the decision to break from Trevor Whitman, who we all agree is one of the best coaches in the game, and do this sort of a solo thing. I feel like that's just no matter the personalities involved, I feel like that usually doesn't work out.
Yeah. About Trevor Whitman specifically, I would say, I don't know that we've ever seen anybody get better and have a better career after leaving Trevor Whitman. And I don't know if he always gets the credit he deserves for that, but you can look back and you see a lot of those guys who left him and then came back to him later because they realized he was an important piece of their training camp. Nate Marquardt being one of those guys who broke away, came back. But also, if you look around, some people who broke away and then things didn't go great for them afterwards. I mean, I'm just going to throw out the name Brendan Schaub. So that's for one thing. I don't think anybody benefits from losing Trevor Whitman. But also the question of having a spouse or a partner in your corner, you're right that I don't think it's ever a good idea. And I did that story a while ago about why fighters so often tend to end up in relationships with other fighters, especially female fighters who tend to end up in relationships with older male fighters or coaches, like older male fighters who serve as coaches or their actual coaches. And it creates a weird dynamic for them that I think is exhausting to both the personal relationship and the fighter-coach relationship. And I remember hearing about this from Brian Caraway and Misha Tate back when they were a couple, and Brian Caraway had been her coach for many years. And then he kind of handed over those duties to the late Robert Follis when they were at Extreme Couture. And the way Robert Follis explained it to them was that you're just putting so much strain on yourselves by having these sort of dueling dynamics at work, because the coach has to be able to be the boss in the gym. But you can't go home and be the boss in a romantic relationship. You got to have a at least somewhat equal partnership. And the way he explained it was, basically what you're doing is you're taking a full glass of water and you're holding it out from your body with your arm straight out. Now, can you do that for 5 minutes? Sure, you probably can. Can you do it all day? Probably not. You're creating this extra strain that is going to prove to be too much. And it's going to have effects on both relationships. And I think he's absolutely right about that. I don't think it's ever a good idea. Turns out also she did need that finger. Like that made a difference, having a finger that was working or not.
Yeah. You know, Rose has marched to the beat of her own drummer for a while in this sport. Her future has always been somewhat in question, at least for the last several years. It doesn't really surprise me that much that she would do this thing with Pat Barry, just because they have always kind of been apart from the crowd. And so, I don't know. We'll just see where it leads her. But it's concerning to me anytime that sort of thing happens, especially when you get initial results that maybe aren't positive, right? Yeah. You come in, you lose a fight, you have an injury, doesn't get addressed, et cetera, et cetera. Next question this week comes to us from Steph, who writes, I haven't checked the MMA news wires yet today, but I thought you'd be curious about this for future discussion. Basically, Steph includes a link here to the story about the Saudi Arabian, I believe it's the General Fund, buying a stake in the PFL, which happened, I think, last week. They go on to say it fits nicely into your regular discussion of how long before the UFC is sold to the Saudis. Few articles we'll find on MMA Fighting, BE, or MMA Junkie will explain what the Vision 2030 is all about, but the context of this purchase within the larger strategy is an interesting point of discussion beyond simply labeling it as sports washing, which, to be fair, it absolutely is. If you want to know more to help understand, have a peek at this. So I first found out that PFL was looking for some money, some Middle Eastern money to come in from what would essentially be a governmental entity a couple weeks ago, just because a listener to the podcast sent me a news story about it. And then I saw pretty quickly after that that the Saudis had bought into the PFL at some level. Now, Vision 2030 is basically the crown prince / prime minister of Saudi Arabia, MBS, who you probably have heard of before, sometimes in not the greatest light, Mohammed bin Salman, who has the Vision 30 program is basically his plan to thrust Saudi Arabia into the modern world, to raise its profile worldwide, to sort of distance itself from Western conventions of what the traditional Middle East is all about, and kind of establish Saudi Arabia as a modern, quote unquote, progressive player in the world, basically. Someone who's a nation that's on par with the United States, with, you know, any European nation, any South American nation that is considered sort of like a big cultural force in the world. And so Saudi Arabia's been spending a lot of money in a lot of different areas, sports being one of them, art being another one. I think that they have gone all in on some architecture, other things like that. But that's basically what it is. And clearly, I would think buying into the PFL would be an incredibly small part of that.
Like yes,
Like 1% of 1% of the portfolio, but it is still meaningful here in the smaller context of our sport, for sure.
Yeah, small to Saudi Arabia and part of their grand vision.
Big for the PFL.
Very big for the PFL, and therefore potentially big for MMA as well. And it, you know, you talk about how you feel like it's only a matter of time for the Saudis or somebody buys the UFC. You might could see this as maybe dipping a toe into the waters and seeing how it feels. This link that Steph sent us here about the 2030 vision of Saudi Arabia, where it lays out these three pillars, being an ambitious nation with a thriving economy and a vibrant society, and sort of changing not only its image, but also like diversifying its economy, which, you know, you might say makes a fair bit of sense if you're looking around as an oil-rich kingdom and being like, ooh, wait, is it running out? Is it running out? And also, is the world maybe moving away from fossil fuels, or at least hoping to? We might want to start planning for that eventuality, for both eventualities. I don't think anybody over in Saudi Arabia thinks that the key to doing that is buying a stake in the PFL, I think that there's a whole bunch of people who probably involved in it who don't even know what the PFL does, or let's say are not acquainted with the intricacies of the smart cage exactly, yeah. You know, are just sort of like, okay, we're buying into another small time sports property and relatively cheaply. But yeah, I mean, I think that if you're the PFL and you're looking around to be like, how do we get bigger from here? How do we move from, you know, already where they've gone to, from being number three behind Bellator to being in contention for number two to now pretty much possessing sole ownership of number two in the MMA yeah. space. Those are significant improvements for a company like the PFL to make. How do you, though, close the what has been in the past 15 years at least, enormous gap between number one and number two? That's the part nobody else has been able to figure out. So if they're looking around for some investment funds, they're like, hey, we need a little bit more of that Shane Burgos money to go out there and pick us up some free agents when the opportunity presents itself. You probably see something like this as a big part of that.
Yeah, and you know, everybody wants that Saudi money. PFL is by far from alone in this move that it has decided to make. They're going to have the Francis Ngannou Tyson Fury fight in Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia invested heavily, or in somebody's words, bought the PGA, Professional Golf Association, recently. There's a lot of Saudi money going around. I know that the British Prime Minister is having MBS come over there to meet to discuss some possible investment, and human rights people in Britain are a little bit up in arms about that. And so this is an interesting and in some ways concerning for some people trend in the world right now. But I don't think it will stop happening unless people just decide they don't want that money. And when was the last time somebody did that? When was the last time somebody decided they didn't want that money? So we'll keep track of it. Could be a big deal for the PFL. We'll just have to wait, I guess, to see how things play out in that regard. That is going to do it for listener mail this week. If you have a question, comment, or concern that you would like to air to the podcast in future weeks, you know how to do it. Go to the website, comainevent.com, and click the link in the top right-hand corner of the screen that says email the podcast. That'll get you in touch with us. As for right now, we are going to go ahead and get started with round number one. Well, Ben, Ciryl Gane came into this fight against Sergey Spivak just 1-2 in his last three. He had that UFC 270 heavyweight championship fight against Francis Ngannou that felt like he kind of let slip through his fingers in terms of allowing Francis Ngannou to storm back to claim that unanimous decision win back in January of 2022. He put up a third-round KO of Tai Tuivasa that following September, but then this March at UFC 285 had just the disastrous performance against John Jones in their heavyweight title fight, getting choked out by Jones in just 2 minutes and 4 seconds in a fight where he really looked like it was his first day at the gym. It really exploited some of his takedown defense deficiency, some of his submission defense, perhaps, deficiencies, and should have really been a back to the drawing board situation for Ciryl Gane. Well, he contends it was and says that he came out and made some changes, you know, changed his focus a little bit, is trying to close up those holes in his game. And I'll tell you what, he did look pretty good against Spivak this past weekend, shut down what few grappling attempts Spivak did make, managed to force this mostly into a stand-up fight, and looked like vintage Ciryl Gane the whole time it was happening. Ends with a win in the second round, 3:44 into that round, TKO. That was really pretty clear-cut from the beginning. It wasn't really like Sergey Spivak had much here for Ciryl Gane, which I think just reminds you that, hey, man, like, it was no fluke that Ciryl Gane was 10-0 and rattled off a bunch of wins in a row in the UFC, won the interim heavyweight title back in 2021. If you let this guy stay on his feet and move around in front of you, he's pretty goddamn good, actually.
Yeah. Especially, he is really goddamn good when he is able to control that distance. Because he, unlike a lot of heavyweights that we've seen who are known for their striking prowess, is not out there trying to hit home runs all the time. He is out there working that jab in your face and working, just chipping away at your body with front kicks and doing good body work throughout a fight that definitely pays dividends. You could see a couple rounds in Sergei Spivak getting that look on his face like, stop poking me in the belly with your goddamn foot. I don't like it. And the thing about this fight is when you let Ciryl Gane do Ciryl Gane stuff, you're dead. He's just got better movement on the outside. You're not going to be able to trap him against the fence just by, you know, cutting off the cage and walking him down. He's got too much for you when you're fighting him at that long range. I just still don't know if we answered any questions about Ciryl Gane's grappling ability, because Sergei Spivak, he started out doing more striking with Ciryl Gane than I expected him to. This is always the question people get into. It's the same question that we wondered when, you know, Curtis Blaydes went out there before. And it was just like, okay, do you want to go out there and wrestle a guy who probably a better striker than you? I mean, eventually. But you don't want to go out there and shoot for a takedown right away, because it basically tells that guy you got nothing on the feet. You don't want any part of it. And takedowns are a lot easier to stop when you know they're coming and when they're out in space like that. And the guys, you may feel like, I got to go out here, get his respect striking-wise, get him thinking about that, and then I'll take him down. But that never happened. And the first couple takedowns Sergei Spivak tried were kind of bending over at the waist, reaching for a leg out in open space. And that is just not how you're going to get it. I mean, you might have a lack of respect for Ciryl Gane's defensive wrestling game if you think that that's the way you're going to get him down and get it into a realm that he can't handle. And so it was like, you know, he got close on a single leg kind of against the fence at one point, and Ciryl Gane managed to he had good defense there and put some strikes on him to force him to give it up. But do you come away from this fight being like, the holes in Ciryl Gane's game are fixed, no problems from here on out?
No, I do not.
Okay.
Sometimes in this sport, we act like fighters are not immortal, but we act like they don't have a ceiling in terms of their ability, right? We act like, oh, if this guy would just go to the gym and train this one aspect, then he would be unstoppable, without any real realistic admission about what their background is, how old they are, how athletic they are, what their general aptitude might be. We just regard them as like pieces of clay that can be molded into anything you want without reservation. And a lot of times that's just not true. Not to say that Ciryl Gane doesn't have this ability, because he looks very athletic. He looks very capable. Every time that we see him, he's obviously one of the best strikers in that division, if not the best striker. But he's 33 years old. He doesn't come from a traditional wrestling background. He's not George St. Pierre. He's not, you know, who knows if he'd ever done any organized wrestling before getting into the UFC. And closing the wrestling holes in your game is one of the most difficult things to do. It seems like it is maybe the most difficult discipline to close the gap between yourself and someone who has been doing it all their lives. And so you can go out there and look real good against Sergei Spivak, but it's going to be hard to erase that memory for us of Francis Ngannou, also not a wrestler, a person who, in fact, eschewed wrestling for a long time, would look at it and would say, I'm not rolling around on the ground with those other guys. I will stand up and knock them out. He went out there and dominated Ciryl Gane for a few rounds with his wrestling when he had a severely injured knee. And so that's going to be a hard memory for us to shake. And that is the thing that I think raises the most questions for me about Ciryl Gane, is that as long as the champion is John Jones, you are going to be forced to stop some pretty good takedowns unless you go out there and essentially knock him out with one shot, which again is also not the skill that Ciryl Gane seems to have. So this is a comeback fight for him, but I also don't know what his real prospects are here so long as Johnny Bones remains the champion.
Yeah, that's fair, because you look around at the top of this division right now, I see some interesting fights for Ciryl Gane up there. I mean, you book Ciryl Gane versus Sergey Pavlovich, Tom Aspinall, these kind of, I mean, there's some interesting action happening among some of the younger fellas in the heavyweight division right now. Maybe the best thing that could happen to a fellow like Ciryl Gane, however, is that John Jones follows through on this promise slash threat to walk away after he fights Stipe Miocic. I'm on record saying he might walk away, but he's not going to stay away.
Yeah,
I don't think he could stand it walking away at this point and seeing some of these other guys go out there and call themselves the UFC heavyweight champion. I think, though, if you're Ciryl Gane, the best chance you have is that fight goes down, John Jones wins, John Jones lays the gloves down in the cage afterwards, says, thanks for all the cheese, I'm going home, and the UFC has to turn right around and be like, okay, Ciryl Gane versus Sergey Pavlovich, that's the fight, and yeah. Then you have a much more winnable matchup for you.
Well, and Ciryl Gane got called out by Tom Aspinall in the wake of this thing, which is two very athletic heavyweights. That is a fight I would not argue with at all. I would love to see those guys fight each other. So maybe that is an immediate opportunity or direction for Ciryl Gane to go in while we wait for John Jones to retire, essentially. Just like maybe Ciryl Gane is mailing John Jones pamphlets for like nice resorts in Florida.
Yeah.
Just like, wow, Johnny, I found out about these timeshares down there in Boca. Have you seen this shit? Look at the pool, my guy. Can you imagine? Just laying out all day. Sipping a cocktail, reading a book.
Just did like you know by the there's pool. There's a cruise you can do to Croatia.
Yeah,
And all the stuff, the food, the drinks are all included, my man. It's unbelievable.
All inclusive. You can come out the mouth of a king cobra snake if you go down the water slide. Make your full time home in Abu Dhabi. Move out to Dubai. What do you think about that, John?
And then I'm going to tell you what. If he gets that, if Ciryl Gane ends up with that Tom Aspinall fight. Big Tom ain't going to go 60 seconds into that fight without shooting a takedown. Believe it.
Yeah. All right. Let's do Are You Fucking Kidding Me? And then we will move on to round number two. Man, this week, Rampage Jackson, he came out and made a big fight announcement.
Oh, God.
Said he's coming back. He is going to fight at the UFL. He said this on the Jackson podcast, J-A-X-X-O-N. I am not going to click on the link to find out what that is. I am looking at the Jed Meshew transcription on MMA Fighting. Rampage, he said he would only come back. He was only going to come back to fight in the UFL if they found him a quote-unquote grudge match. They got him a grudge match. So here's what he's going to do. Here's what Rampage announced that is going to be his next fight. He's going to go out there, Ben. Rampage Jackson is going to go out there and he is going to fight titties. He's fighting titties, Ben. Rampage Jackson versus titties. The grudge match we've all been waiting years for. Daryl Schoonover. If you didn't, more people are current fans of MMA who were not around.
Yeah.
When Rampage Jackson and Daryl Schoonover had their Ultimate Fighter feud. Then do remember it. I'm convinced of that. Most of us have died off, like the dinosaurs, people who were alive to watch this season of The Ultimate Fighter. In a nutshell, Quentin Rampage Jackson got himself into a feud when he was a coach on The Ultimate Fighter.
Yeah.
And Daryl Schoonover was a contestant by essentially making fun of his man on the street build by nicknaming him Titties, which we all had a lot of fun with back then. Nah, it's 2023, man. Are you fucking kidding me? We're going to have Rampage Jackson settle the score with titties some fucking 11 years later or whatever it is. Just like fucking titties, dude. Come on. It's, you know what? That is beneath even Rampage.
First of all,
I never thought we would get to, but here we are. Are you fucking kidding me, dude? Titties. We're going to fight Daryl Schoonover. Get the fuck out of here.
First of all, I want to point out that a quick glance at Daryl Schoonover's Tapology page informs us that he last fought in 2015 when he lost via disqualification at Rocks Extreme MMA 19. So that's where his MMA career was kind of stalled out, it seems. Second of all, according to Tapology, His nickname is The Boss, to which I would say, no, it isn't. No, it isn't. We all know what his nickname is. Rampage forced it upon him. That is the whole reason why this is even a thought as a grudge match. Third and lastly of all, don't it just say something about this sport that a grudge match could legitimately be based on the fact that one time, one guy made the other guy mad by calling him titties. That's all. That's all it is. That's all that's here.
Yep.
We're going to build a fight around it. A fight that no one wants or needs to see.
Titties, dude. Are you fucking kidding me?
Fucking kidding me? Well, Chad, this week, my are you fucking kidding me? So Ciryl Gane had himself a good weekend, but also a bad weekend.
Mm-hmm.
It seems, according to reports, that while Ciryl Gane was out there in Acor Arena, granddaddy of them all in Paris, France, beating up Sergei Spivak in the main event, thieves were robbing his home. Now, apparently this is a known thing to happen to a lot of pro athletes over there in Europe, where because it's like, they know you ain't home.
Yeah.
They know it. They know you are busy elsewhere. And so they target your house, go in there, rob all this fancy shit you got, Mr. Pro Athlete. Apparently it's happened to a lot of famous soccer players over there, especially in France, and especially even in the Paris Saint-Germain team that has often been targeted, especially if they know you're out of town. First of all, are you fucking kidding me? That's some cold-ass shit. Cold-ass shit. Fucking... go rob a fucking oil tycoon or something. Go rob somebody who's rich for bad reasons. You know, rob one of those people who is sitting on a great fortune due to a great crime. You know, there's plenty of those people around. Rob they ass when they out there in Turks and Caicos or whatever. Coming out the mouth of the Cobra and in Fight Island. Whatever. Do that shit. You're going to go and rob Ciryl Gane, a guy who... all the shit he got, he paid for in blood, his own or someone else's? Are you fucking kidding me? But also, at some point, Chad, these pro athletes need to Spartan up. They need to be like, look, I'm going to make a point of getting on my Instagram, getting on my Twitter, getting on my goddamn LinkedIn if I have to, and be like, all right, headed off to my fight. Just going to lock up. Turn on my security system and leave a bunch of poisonous snakes all over the floor of my home. And, you know, can't wait to get back home to my coterie of attack cheetahs. The pet polar bear that I let him wander around the living room when I'm gone. He likes to stretch out and enjoy the space. Like, just make a point. Have a friend watch the crib, something, man. You know that they know you're not home.
Yeah.
Are you fucking kidding me?
You're fucking kidding me. I would think there are better people to rob, man. You know? Don't rob someone who hurts people for a living. Ciryl Gane seems like a wonderful guy. Probably going to call the cops. When if he finds out it was you, he's probably not going to beat you up in the street. But he might. You better hope he doesn't find out it was you.
Yeah, you better hope.
I would rob a fucking ventriloquist. You know?
Well, I don't think this was a crime that you planned... with thinking about what if we get caught. Like, I think that this was one where you're like, we better not get caught. Also, to your point about Ciryl Gane's a nice guy, going to call the cops. I don't know if you saw Dana White talking about posting, like, you know, doorbell cam footage of somebody trying to kick in the door of one of his houses, houses that he doesn't live in, fucking every man, Dana White. And then... you know, him getting real tough guy about it afterwards. Like, you don't want to come to my house. Nothing good's going to happen to you at my house. Motherfucker, you going to call the cops? That's what you're going to do? Like, don't be out here playing gangster. We remember when your favorite stripper tried to fucking extort you. You called the cops is what you did. Like a reasonable person. You're not out here like fucking Joe Pesci in Goodfellas. You know, you're not out here digging holes in the Nevada desert like it's Casino. You're calling the cops. Fucking stop it.
That's going to do it for round number one. We'll be right back with round number two.
Well, Chad, UFC 293 gonna go down on Sunday over there in the other hemisphere on Saturday night here in the one true time zone. Main evented by Israel Adesanya, newly reminted as UFC middleweight champion, and gonna defend his title after this huge big buildup of a grudge match against Dricus du Plessis against Sean Strickland, who is also in the middleweight division. Not exactly the first choice that anybody, I think, had on their list. No. Obviously, we wanted to do Israel Adesanya versus DDP. DDP, I think, somewhat wisely went, I was already hurt going into this Bobby Knuckles fight. Kind of rolled the dice there, and it worked out. Not going to turn right around if your body's not ready for it and fight the best middleweight in the world just because it's on the UFC's calendar that, shit, man, we're going to Australia. We got to have one of our Australian stars fight. And they want Israel Adesanya versus TBD. I think probably smart of Dricus du Plessis to be like, I'm not going to put a lesser version of myself into what is already going to be a tough-ass fight. And so instead, Sean Strickland, the guy who is just sort of hanging around down the street from the UFC apex all the time, it seems, steps up to take this one. And you tell me if you think I'm wrong. I look at this matchup on paper, and what I see is an uphill climb for Sean Strickland.
Yeah, you don't think it's an advantageous matchup of styles for him?
Where does he win it is my question.
You think maybe his biggest qualification for this fight is that he's around?
His biggest qualification for this fight was that he said yes, that he picked up the phone and said yes.
Yeah.
And honestly, and I don't blame him for that at all. Like, that's opportunities have been built on far less, and people have capitalized on them in the UFC. Michael Bisping became champ because they needed somebody to step in and fight Luke Rockhold, and he landed a good punch and now gets to walk around saying he was a UFC champion. So that can happen. That absolutely could happen here. But when I think about what Sean Strickland brings to the table against what Israel Adesanya brings to the table, both guys at their best, I don't see how Sean Strickland really does it, man. Because for all the psycho killer talk, he is not a power puncher. He is not a vicious finisher in that cage. He's just not known for that. He's known for high output, you know, good cardio, going to keep coming at you, going to keep throwing a whole bunch of stuff at you. And is a lot of times a fairly smart fighter in how he plays to his strengths in that way. And is tough, has a good gas tank, has all that stuff going for him. But here you got Israel Adesanya, a guy who really excels when he is the bigger, taller guy who can control the range, who can force you into having to solve the problem of the range. Do you stay on the outside and let him pick you apart? Do you go rushing in and get, you know, right into the teeth of his offense? Do you try to take him down only to find out that it's a lot harder than you think if you're not like a much bigger dude, like somebody like Jan Blachowicz was? Like, I just don't see where Sean Strickland has an advantage.
Yeah, you never want to say never because we've seen crazy stuff happen in this sport before. But Sean Strickland is only two fights removed from his back-to-back losing streak, the one where he got just knocked out in a nasty way by Alex Pereira, UFC 276, and then he lost that split decision to Jared Cannonier, which obviously was much closer. Previous to that, he'd won six fights in a row, so he was on a nice little win streak. The two wins that he has to qualify him for this championship fight are against Nassourdine Imavov and Abusupian Magomedov. Those are his wins leading up to this title fight. In fact, here's what I was just thinking a second ago. What's Sean Strickland's biggest win? What's his best win in the UFC if you just look at the history of Sean Strickland? Here are the wins previous before he got knocked out by Alex Pereira. Jack Hermanson, Uriah Hall, Christoph Jotko, Brendan Allen, Jack Marshman, Nordine Taleb. Before that, he had wins over Court McGee, Tom Breeze, Alex Garcia, Igor Araujo, Luke Barnett, and Bubba McDaniel. That's the grand total of Sean Strickland's UFC victories. You know, ain't no Israel Adesanya on that list, I gotta say.
Yeah.
And so while I think he's got a minuscule chance, a single digit, maybe a decimal point chance to beat Israel Adesanya, I agree with you. This is a terrible matchup of styles for him. It is a great matchup of styles for Israel Adesanya. And it does seem like Sean Strickland had his main qualification was being around, which frankly is what he has hung his hat on in the UFC. He's around. He lives in Las Vegas. If you need somebody to come fight at the Apex, call Strickland. He ain't got nothing else going on Saturday night. He'll come down and do it. And now he's kind of worked his way into a title shot by being around. And it just doesn't seem like he has much shot here, frankly.
Now, we're just sort of getting into the fight week buildup. Already, I've seen Sean Strickland popping up saying Sean Strickland stuff.
Yeah.
He did show up in Australia right away and be like, wow, you guys are a country built by convicts, but you have a nice place here. That was his idea of complimenting his hosts. And then also is still doubling down on claiming that Israel Adesanya is secretly gay and paints his fingernails and all this other stuff that is just, you know, very much what Sean Strickland would say. So, and here where you have an opportunity where Israel Adesanya, man, he's begging for you to play the good guy. You're at home. You know, you're in the against this guy who is like his whole thing is trying to be shockingly outrageous all the time. He's teeing you up to be the baby face, but also it seems like maybe Israel Adesanya sometimes can't get out of his own way in that regard. I wanted to read this question that we got from Scott among our listener mail, where he writes, "Did you guys see Izzy's little tirade on how public education is bad making the rounds? Now, listening to a professional cage fighter pontificate on what's wrong with the education system is amusing in and of itself, but I thought the highlight being that teachers are, quote, just in it for a paycheck, like that sweet 35 grand a year public teacher makes is just a gravy train. Thoughts?" Now, I found the full quotes on it from Bloody Elbow. There's a Bloody Elbow story on this by Zane Simon. And, you know, it starts off, I believe, with Adesanya saying, "Fuck school." So, right, I mean, that's how you play to like a 13-year-old demographic, you know, is just like go right out there and be like, "Fuck school. Don't listen to your parents. Eat pizza. Stay up late." But he goes on, "I don't even know why we still have this whole fucking just this outdated concept of school to just build workers. Because we know what the fuck school was made for. Why are we pretending? We know school was created to create workers. Bro, what the fuck is X? Bro, I'm still waiting. Still. I'm like, when have I in my life as an adult known what the fuck X is? No fucking idea. A lot of useless information passed on to me in school. And I sucked at school because I was shit at memorizing. I didn't really learn anything. Dropouts, as we do." First of all, about that, I would say some people do figure out what X is and then go on to fields where it's kind of important that they be able to figure that and other shit out. And like the fact that you can sit around and look up these Israel Adesanya quotes on a phone means somebody had to solve for X somewhere in there. Like, so I understand that you went to school and was like, maybe this is not for me, but
yeah,
the shit is kind of necessary in a lot of ways for a lot of other people. The other thing is this quote that Scott seizes on here about how teachers are just in it for the paycheck. Here the quote here. He says, "School, going there, clocking in, sitting down, watching the teacher write some shit on the board and write. No one's teaching. Literally, some of these people are just there to cash a paycheck. I've seen it. I was in school. You just see them there. They'll just write shit on the board." First of all, stop saying about any job these people are just in it for the paycheck. That's what the fuck a job is, man. That's what the fuck a job is. Anytime you go out into the world and anybody does anything for you, whether it's a craft that they really, really care about, whether it's just something like, you know, pouring you a cup of coffee, whether it's fixing your car, well, all this other shit, they're doing it for money because that's the system that we live under. It's either you do that or you live out on the streets. And so everybody got to do something for money, man. And if people have a talent in some area and they do that for money, that does not make them bad. That does not make them not good at the thing or make them not care about the thing. And also, like, his just idea, like, maybe the school Israel Adesanya went to was shit. I don't know. But to just be like, no one is teaching. Motherfucker. There's people out there enduring terrible conditions, like work conditions, low pay, the chance that somebody's just going to come in and shoot them at any given moment, just for being there. And they're doing it because they want to teach.
Yeah. Yeah, this is not the first time I've heard someone say that public school teachers are just there to get a paycheck, which is fucking outrageous. Because it doesn't even, if you want to go into something for the money, teaching was not a great choice. Should have done something else. This was supposed to be the DDP fight that we thought was going to be politically charged about, like, apartheid and the nature of what it means to be truly African. And we traded that in for this. So we were fucked either way we went. But it is very odd to think that that's the lead up to the fight we thought we were going to get. And instead we get Sean Strickland enjoying his vacation in Australia and Israel Adesanya saying this stuff about public school. Sean Strickland, by the way, basically showed up and the first thing he did was start bragging about how he punched somebody on the street. He said that he was out walking around in Sydney and someone approached him and they started talking shit. They said, Izzy's going to fuck you up. Strickland said he punched the guy in the stomach. Boom, right in the guts, Strickland said. I'd only been in Australia a day and already I'd committed an assault. Initially, I thought the guy was coming up for a photo because anybody who wants a photo, man, I love the fans. But if you want to come up to me and run your fucking mouth, I'll smack you like I smack anybody else. Uppercut to the stomach. Then I walked away. But if I see the guy again, man, no problem. I'll thank him for not pressing charges.
Yet.
Yeah.
I mean, now, maybe. I mean, this does, though, conjure up for me one of the objectively funniest things to ever happen in mixed martial arts, which was when Fabricio Werdum was in Australia for a UFC event there, and a fan gave him a boomerang in a plastic bag. And then he encountered, was it Colby Covington? Out on the streets, and threw the boomerang at him and hit him in the head with it while it was still in the bag. And then had some legal trouble in Australia as a result. So maybe they don't play about shit like that. You might just want to watch your steps because it's going to be a long trip back if you have to go make a court appearance, you know, a couple months from now.
We started all this with Israel Adesanya bragging about how he tapped Sean Strickland in the nuts backstage at the UFC, and now we got Sean Strickland punching a random guy on the street in the stomach. It's been a whirlwind.
If that nut tap shit is... Did he say dick? I think he might have said dick. I think he said I hit him in the dick, and I still don't know if that's meant to be literal or figurative. I still have no concept of it.
Well, and who knows if Sean Strickland is telling the truth about this either. But anyway, that's going to do it for round number two. We will be right back with round number three. Ben, I'm going to start round three here with this listener mail we got from Nolan Drafal, who writes, is UFC 293 the worst card on paper in recent memory? There's a title on the line, but the champ is more than a 7-1 favorite, and there are no other fights of consequence. Tuivasa is a fun dude, but he's coming off two losses and fighting a guy in Volkov who is good, but will never be the champ. Manuel Cape, his initial opponent, dropped out because Cape, am I saying that guy's name right? I feel like I always fuck
think
his
so.
Name. Okay, Cape. You're asking the wrong guy. Worst luck in the world, so now he's facing a UFC debutant. And who cares about the other two fights? Seriously, I'm wondering if you guys didn't work in the MMA space, what would you be willing to pay for this pay-per-view? 20, 30, anything? And maybe I'm giving them too much credit because I assume they've researched this and ruled it out as making good business sense, but have you guys thought about how it would be if the UFC charged card-specific pay-per-view prices? I think it'd be kind of dope. Happy Labor Day, and thanks for all you do. I have seen in a comedic way, my old coworker, Jonathan Snowden, at times will post a UFC card along with the dollar value of what he would pay to watch either fighter fight. And then he comes up with what the price of the pay-per-view should be. And I think a buffet style would be an interesting way.
A la carte?
Yeah. To both charge and pay for a UFC pay-per-view. But what you're also saying is, do you think they would ever consider charging us less for one of these things? Right? Because if they want to charge us more, they will. They've done that in the past. And so what you're really asking in that question is like, do you think they would ever consider giving us a cut rate deal on a cut rate pay-per-view? And the answer to that question is never in your fucking life will they do that. Never, ever, ever will they do that.
Well, they don't have any incentives to do it now, right? Because it's, for one thing, the deal with ESPN means that ESPN is setting these pay-per-view prices, and you know the UFC might have some input on it, but it's why ESPN we're raising the price $5 every fucking year like clockwork, because ESPN is paying a flat fee for all of them, regardless of whether anybody buys them or not. And then you know the UFC is going to get some money on top of that, depending on how many people do buy it, but they get the set amount of money just for putting on the show. So that changes up the incentive somewhat. I think a way more realistic future scenario for how pay-per-views and how we pay for and consume them might change is something more like a yearly subscription model where you pay this right. one fee and you get all the events. And I mean, who knows what that then does to the quality of pay-per-views though. You know, this whole Australian fight card, it did seem like the UFC decided first, we're going to Sydney on this date. We'll figure out with what later. You know, we'll figure out what the card is going to be later. We know that as soon as the shit goes on sale, it's going to sell out. And they're right. It is going to sell out. They have a rabid fan base there. It's a place that you go to seldom enough that they're really stoked to see you when you come back. They have a whole bunch of fighters from the region. They know you're probably going to pack it with some of those guys. They're just going to buy up the tickets because they know those tickets aren't going to be around if you wait to see who's on the card. And so then the UFC kind of was like, okay, we'll get around to filling out the card. But also, you're so tied to the calendar and the schedule at this point that, hey, you wanted to make Israel Adesanya versus Dricus du Plessis. Couldn't do it. So you have to go to a backup plan there. You may have wanted a couple other fights that would be both of general and local interest. Maybe you couldn't do those. And so the next thing you know, you end up with a fight card where, yeah, there's not a ton jumping out at you. Even the main event feels like a plan B. It feels kind of one-sided. You're really relying on personalities to sell it. Further down the card, it's like, okay, you know, this is sort of what you would expect. Okay, you're going to Australia. You're going to throw Tai Tuivasa on there, if that's at all possible. You're going to throw, you know, a Pedro and a Tafa in at us. You could get some of those guys in there, but there's nothing that you look at this and you'd be like, okay, well, this shit I got to see.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And, you know, sometimes we have short memories in this sport. We love to succumb to this recency bias and say this is the worst card ever or the worst card we've seen in a long time. But this one is kind of bad, I got to say, to look at if you are thinking about spending your money. This might be one where you want to see if there is alternate. I don't know. I've heard, hypothetically speaking, that there are ways that somebody can watch a pay-per-view, but I wouldn't know anything about it myself. I don't know. This is just it's a bit of a middling one, I guess. I think you know, made a great point when you said that the main event is a plan B, and it kind of trickles down from there. So kind of a bummer, I think, maybe for the Australian fans. It remains to be seen how this one will sell on pay-per-view. I imagine that the discriminating UFC fans in Australia are probably muttering about it. Many of them will probably go just because they don't get a ton of opportunity. But like, that's a bit of a cynical way to book your fight card, frankly, just being like, we have decades now of evidence that the hardcore fans of this sport will buy whatever. And so we are going to go down to a place we don't normally go, where people will be hungry for it, and we'll just give them a lesser product. But I think you're right. It seems like that is what the UFC is up to these days.
As for the question of whether we are going to buy it or what we would consider paying for it, just to let people behind the curtain, we're busy that night.
Yeah.
We got some plans of our own.
That's right. We started the show off with a talk of professional wrestling. We will end it as such. We're helping put on another professional wrestling event here in Missoula. We did one back in 2018. We wanted to do some more, but the pandemic got in the way. Here we are, Saturday, September 9th, 2023. It's going down for real out at the Western Montana Fairgrounds, an independent wrestling show featuring some really great talent, by the way, bringing Prestige Wrestling in from Washington. They're going to put on a great show. If you happen to be anywhere in the Montana area and you want to have a fun night on Saturday, come on down to the fairgrounds and watch some wrestling.
Yeah, going to be a good time.
All right, let's get into Just Saying Stuff, and then we'll get out of here for this week. Ben, what is your Just Saying Stuff?
Well, Jed, this week for my Just Saying, I'm going to just read you a tweet. This tweet is by the big homie, the Filthy Casual, at MMA Filthy Casual, a must follow in the MMA space, according to me. Responding to news, big news, that Lorisenko is finally getting her shot at doing commentary on a UFC pay-per-view. At UFC 293 this week. We've been saying that this is overdue. She does a great job. Anytime they give her an opportunity, she knocks it out of the park. Now we're finally going to give her an opportunity on a pay-per-view. And the tweet in question here from the Filthy Casual, quote, first woman commentating a PPV, and it's Izzy versus Strickland. The MMA gods have a sense of humor. I'm just saying, she's not wrong. Yeah. She's not wrong.
She's not wrong.
Just saying.
Well, Ben, this week I'm just saying Tito Ortiz just opened a new restaurant. I think it's down there in Huntington Beach. And you know our guy over at the Borrachina Depot was going to be all over it on the early reviews of Tito Ortiz's new restaurant. And let's just say they are not positive.
Ooh.
It's called Tito's Cantina, tapas-style menu offering authentic Mexican cuisine. It sounds like the location was very popular. It sounds like Tito Ortiz's restaurant ran out of food real quick and then maybe didn't have any more food for the next night.
One of the most important aspects of the restaurant business, as I understand it, is that you got to have food to sell.
I guess this week I'm just saying, you know what? There are times when I'm tempted to feel bad for Tito Ortiz just because he is so ridiculously bad at everything. Good fighter, great fighter in his day, good wrestler, bad at everything else. And sometimes I'm like, man, that sucks for Tito Ortiz to be bad at everything else. But I don't know if I can even feel bad for the guy when it comes to serving something called the T-Mac Taco, which claims to be carne asada, shredded lettuce, T-Mac sauce, onion, and cilantro. And if you look at this, tweet from Borrachina Depot and you scroll forward, you can see what it actually is. The T-Mac sauce reportedly is a ripoff of McDonald's Big Mac sauce. So okay. The sauce that you would get on a Big Mac. And this particular quote-unquote taco is served on a series of hamburger buns. Ben, Tito Ortiz is out here serving tacos on hamburger buns at his authentic Mexican cuisine restaurant. I'm just saying, I can't even feel bad for him. I can't even feel bad for him because he is even worse at stuff than I thought he was. I can't even feel bad for him.
I can't. I mean, I don't know how you call it a taco at that point, frankly.
No, that's a burger. That's a sloppy Joe is what that is. You're serving sloppy Joes right now at your authentic Mexican cuisine restaurant.
You have reinvented and then misidentified the sloppy Joe.
Tito's Cantina. Just saying. All right, we're going to get out of here for this week. Thanks to everybody for listening. Sorry we were a day late here owing to the holiday. We will be back tomorrow for the people behind the Patreon paywall. We got the live chat coming up on Thursday doing the damn thing where we're going to chat with our guy Patrick Wyman about everything going on in his life. You may remember him from earlier work in MMA. He has since graduated to other things. I was going to say bigger and better, but I don't want to insult the audience. And we'll talk to him on Thursday. And then, of course, Friday, the Power Hour, where we will get you absolutely fucking psyched for UFC 293. Thanks for listening, everybody. As for right now, we are done. We are through. We are out.
I do want to point out that Borrachina Depot has this review from somebody who writes how awful their T-Mac tacos were and that it was supposed to come out with rice and beans, but did not. And they finally got the beans. Quote, they were some of the worst of the beans any of the three of us ever tasted. Now here's a window into this group when you see it. Jen thought they tasted like lime. I thought they tasted like lint. And Bryson thought they tasted like shit.
I'm with Bryson. I've tasted it.
Imagine them just going around the table. You start off with lime. Like, Jen's really trying to place it, you know? She's really trying to give an honest answer. Then lint. I don't know how you even know what lint tastes like. And then Bryson's like, they taste like shit. And he goes, the conversation just falls off. That could be.